Good morning, Justices. Sean Tucker for the record. Here with me today on behalf of the defendant, DBE, is Mr. Quillen, Ms. Clisby, and on behalf of the town of Dewey Beach, Ms. Mesavinos.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chief Justice Steele, Justice Holland, Justice Berger, Justice Jacobs, and Justice Ridgely. May I reserve 8 minutes
yes.
for rebuttal, please, Your Honor. May it please the Court, I am Michael McDermott of Berger Harris on behalf of plaintiffs' appellants. I'm joined by my colleague, Mr. David Anthony. Plaintiffs are four citizen property owners who have taken this appeal from the Court of Chancery's dismissal of their complaint, challenging the validity and enforceability of a mutual litigation settlement agreement and a release of personal liability. The MAR is an agreement between the town of Dewey Beach and a corporate citizen of that town who had commenced and maintained five lawsuits against the town arising out of its efforts to develop a parcel of land. The town and its insurer negotiated and entered into the MAR on behalf of certain current and former volunteer members of the town council, the town's current mayor, the building official, the town's former town manager, and former member of the Planning and Zoning Commission. The MAR included, among its privately ordered exchanges, contractual authorization for the town's council to approve and issue a building permit, something that only the town's building inspector is legally authorized to do under the town's code, and further authorize a series of extensions for that building permit that exceeded the number and length of extensions that are set forth in the town's
code. The issue in this case is whether the Court of Chancery erred in finding no subject matter jurisdiction. Is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor, on two bases. One is on the basis of 8126A as to the challenge to the MAR, and also on the basis of 12B1.
Why don't we get right to the point of why you believe the Court of Chancery erred on each of those two points?
Very well. If I may, I will primarily focus on 8126A and the Court of Chancery's erroneous application to bar plaintiff's challenge to the MAR. And plaintiffs submit that if successful in achieving reversal on the basis of 8126A's inapplicability to the MAR, it would be dispositive of the appeal and obviate the need for the Court to substantively address the two additional issues addressed in the Court of Chancery's opinion. Second, of course, I will address those two additional issues, namely the Court's erroneous application of 8126B to the one discrete and we submit inextricable part of the MAR, the plan approval component, and also address the plaintiff's purported failure to seek and pursue all available adequate legal remedies. The primary basis for dismissal of plaintiff's complaint was application by the court of what the court referred to variously in its opinion as the exceedingly harsh and draconian 60-day period of statutory repose, the extraordinarily brief window during which any challenge to the MAR must have commenced. And the court buttressed its opinion and its application of 8126 by construing it broadly so that it may fulfill its important public policy purposes. The court's broad construction constituted error because it impermissibly expanded the statute's unambiguous predicate language in a way that cannot be reasonably attributed to the legislature. And the court likewise erred by determining on these unique facts that one of the statute's policy underpinnings, the policy of certainty and finality in land use decisions, outweighed the equally robust public policy favoring meticulous compliance and adherence with statutes establishing the requirements
now,
for enacting.
Do you agree that an amendment to the zoning law would come within the ambit of 8126?
The enactment of an amendment.
Okay. But I thought the Vice Chancellor's approach was that your claim was that here there was an effective amendment of an impermissible one of the zoning ordinance. And therefore, why doesn't that qualify?
Our claim challenged the MAR as a contract that resulted in a modification of the zoning regulations or laws that for one particular property owner and
contract zoning.
Yes, and the court accepted our legal proposition at the pleading stage, we believe, impermissibly to make it fit into the 8126A scheme.
Well, let's
but your argument is, as I understand it anyway, that the MAR, as you call it, is contract zoning and therefore an illegal amendment of the comprehensive plan, or by inference, an ordinance that would change the comprehensive plan. So how can you argue, if that is in effect what it is, or as some of our cases say, the functional equivalent of enacting a zoning change without an ordinance, thereby modifying the comprehensive plan, it's an illegal zoning change. And the statute says they must be challenged within 60 days.
Part of our claim is, and I think the bulk of our claim, is that this was impermissible contract authority. We're challenging the authority.
Let's assume that's correct, and let's assume the Vice Chancellor would have agreed with you that that's correct. Doesn't 8126 nevertheless bar any suit challenging that illegality that's more than 60 days later?
8126A requires the enactment. This is the careful balance in 8126A.
Well, let me see if I get this right. Everybody agrees, including your side, that the effect of the MAR, or the approval of the MAR, was to operate as an amendment to the zoning code, correct?
It appears. It appears, but not at the time.
It was the effect.
It appears to have resulted.
All right. Isn't it correct that your view of the law is that the statute applies only if the suit constant or the claim is a direct attack on action by the town council rezoning, explicitly rezoning a particular piece of land, as opposed to approving a contract that has the effect of rezoning?
That's correct.
So the distinction here is between an ordinance or direct action of the council rezoning and approving of a contract that has the identical effect, but that doesn't take that form.
Yes, but 8126A requires the enactment of an ordinance or the enactment of an amendment, and the enactment component.
Sorry, is that the distinction that your claim or your position relies on? The form in which this amendment to the zoning code is achieved.
Yes, the form being a private contract approved by a resolution.
The statute says any ordinance, and then it says. Any ordinance relating to zoning or any amendment thereto. Does that mean an amendment to the ordinance, or does it mean, if the ordinance is the comprehensive plan, any form of amendment to the comprehensive plan?
Your Honor, what we've lost focus of, I believe, and I don't mean not to answer your question, but...
Well, you won't be the first person to tell me I've lost focus.
8126A... requires the enactment of an ordinance or the enactment of an amendment to an existing ordinance or regulation. That evidences the careful policy balance that a governing body must enact by legislation.
We're forced to look at the literal wording of the statute. This contract zoning about which you complain, did it result in a change in the zoning map or the comprehensive plan?
No. It did not technically. It constituted, as the court found, it constituted a change. It had the substantive effect of providing a zoning change for this particular parcel. Yet no amendment was enacted. It was a private contract that provided zoning approvals by a town resolution. There was no formal legislative enactment. No, by the governing body.
No, I get that. But looking at the statute and determining whether it's broad or narrow in scope, we begin, and if it's unambiguous, we end with the literal words of the statute and leave it to the General Assembly to straighten out what they didn't anticipate would occur at a later time. This refers to a challenge to the legality of a map. or any amendment thereto. It's not expressly limited to challenging a specific ordinance. So does this language include within it the illegal contract zoning that may have occurred here, which has resulted in a change to the comprehensive plan or the zoning map because it has rezoned a single piece of property?
We submit no, because the plain language of the statute requires that a contract is not an enactment. A resolution approving a contract is not an enactment because it doesn't have the force of law.
Is your analysis of the statute one based on a liberal interpretation of the statute or a strict construction of the statute?
The statute has been broadly construed, and the Delaware's jurisprudence supports that.
Well, where's what your analysis, which category does it fit in?
It's the a plain language analysis. The statute is strictly construed in its application, but the language is broadly construed by the courts. And what language can't be broadly construed beyond its limits is the enactment requirement. It requires a governing body to make an enactment. And an enactment has a specific meaning. And the legislature put that enactment of an ordinance in there to carefully balance. If you're going to achieve the benefit of repose, the significant benefit of a 60-day period of repose, the governing body of a county or municipality, because 8126A doesn't apply to all zoning or any zoning-related decisions. It only applies to an enactment by a governing body of an ordinance, zone, ordinance, regulation, code, or map, or the enactment of an amendment to an existing zoning regulation, code, ordinance, or map.
All right, so if I understand you correctly, then, while this contract zoning may have resulted in a change to the zoning map, this statute of repose doesn't bar your challenge because the contract zoning wasn't implemented by way of an actual enactment of an ordinance.
That's correct, because the map was not actually changed. The map is not changed today. There was no amendment to the code.
Well, when you rezone a piece of property and you're supposed to work within a comprehensive plan, unless things have changed since I did work in this area, the zoning map has to comply the next time it's redone to the change, whether it's a change made by ordinance or whether it's a change made in another way.
What they did through the MAR was retroactively apply the MAR and the permit and plan that were submitted under the MAR to the comprehensive plan. If the MAR didn't exist, that plan and permit would be subject to the current zoning code, which was...
Is part of your interpretation of the statute based upon any difference in the level of notice that's given to the public about the event that has taken place or is about to take place?
Notice in advance of the approval of this contract or notice after the fact?
Either way, a 60-day statute of repose is admittedly fairly short. One might think that it was expected that anybody who wanted to object would know about it right away, so it could still be accomplished within 60 days. So I'm asking whether there's anything about the way this MAR was made known that was different from the way an ordinance or an amendment would be made known such that it would impact that 60 days.
We believe plainly on a couple of fronts. Number one, the record facts support that there was plenty of public pronouncement by the defendants about what the MAR was not. It was not an enactment of an amendment. It was not a conditional use. It was not a variance. It did not require the enactment of an ordinance. It would not amend or change the zoning code. This
is
their public pronouncement.
I'm not sure you're answering my question, or maybe I didn't make myself clear. What I want to know is, do you claim that there is any difference in the amount of notice that you were given or that the public was given under the MAR versus the way notice would be given under an ordinance or an amendment to an ordinance that would impact how much time you've got to object if you want to.
The amount of notice, that it's not clear. The MAR did not track the same statutory requirements, the adherence to the submission of a plan or permit. It lumped it all together. It did it in a very short period of time in the dead of winter at a beach community. The town signed it on December 6th.
They when did you it. Find out about it?
I imagine that shortly after December 6th.
And how was that? You just happened to look in some records, or was it publicized?
I think there was publicized, for sure. There was notice of the MAR. There was not notice of what the MAR was and what it was.
Well, Justice Berger's question is the publication in the News Journal of the enactment or the passage or whatever, however you wouldn't characterize it as an enactment, but of the existence of the MAR, there was a publication.
Indeed.
Was it the same kind of notice that would have been given to the public had it been done by ordinance rather than by contract zoning?
I don't believe so. By virtue of the fact that it was notice of a contract between the town. So when a notice of a building permit is published, when a notice of the submission of a site plan is published, it's very clear what it is.
Well, tell me what the distinction is. If this is contract zoning and the MAR is illegal, and that's fundamental to your ultimate argument because that's what you're challenging, and there's a publication that says this has happened, it purports to change zoning in the way in which this notice describes, why is that any less viable notice than a publication of the passage of an ordinance that would have done the same thing? What's the distinction?
First of all, the notice was gratuitous, because it did not do what it purported to do. It did not amend the code, and it actually didn't even purport to amend.
Notices don't amend codes.
I'm sorry, it did not purport to amend the code, and it did not...
Notices don't purport to amend codes. Sorry, notices give notice.
It did not give notice that the town had amended the code. It provided notice that the town had approved by a town resolution an agreement and a plan component. The town council had approved a building permit and a plan. And so it's not...
Which, if someone read, would demonstrate that they had effectively amended the zoning.
Perhaps by contract. That's right. And we are challenging the contractual authority to do so.
Yeah, but the issue is, have you challenged it in time? Or are you barred by the statute of repose?
We are not barred by the statute of repose under 8126A because a resolution approving a private contract is not an enactment of an ordinance. It is not the enactment of an amendment. And that's Your Honor, it's the policy balance that was identified in Sandpiper, in Your Honor's decision.
Well, what does an enactment, the word enactment, require?
A legislative act that has the force of law.
And the approval of this contract is not action by the legislative body that has the force of law.
Could not have had the force of law because it was done by resolution.
Your point is it's not a methodology for changing the zoning code that's contemplated by 8126A.
That's correct, and it's not explicitly set forth in 8126A.
We're talking about form.
Form and
by
substance.
Which the same result is achieved. That is, on the one hand, having an explicit enactment that explicitly amends the zoning code, which you agree would be covered by the statute, and an ordinance approving a contract that has the effect of amending the zoning code, which you contend is not.
And having the 8126A, the plain language in front of you, it requires the enactment of one of those enumerated legislative acts or the enactment of an amendment to one of those. This notice, and in fact the actions taken by the town and the defendants here, did not do any of those.
Well, didn't Sandpiper address the issue of whether a defect in the enactment process somehow carved out an exception from 8126? And the answer in that case was no. The defects don't matter.
And Justice Jacobs in that case said that the policy of repose continues and laches would apply because neither one of the policies are absolute. The policy for strict adherence to statutory requirements for enacting zoning regulations, nor is the statute of repose absolute. And the court relied on Bay Colony, and Bay Colony needs to be vacated, and I submit so for the following reason. In Bay Colony, as cited by, he says that the holding is that 10 DLC 8126 does not mention legislation or legislative function, and it does. It talks about an enactment. It specifically refers and requires an enactment as the predicate language, the predicate act of a governing body before the benefits. Even if it's not perfectly done, there must be an enactment. The cases are replete with enactments by a governing body that were later found to have been technically noncompliant. But once that enactment is noticed, it occurs and is noticed, then the benefit of repose applies. Here, the court relied on Bay Colony to say that it doesn't need to be a legislative function. It doesn't need to be an enactment, but it does. And that's the basis.
Okay, you're into your rebuttal. Do you want to say
May it? I reserve, Your Honor. Thank you.
May it please the court. With the court's permission, Mr. Venus and I would like to split the 25 minutes, 12 and a half each.
We have that.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor and Justices, I would like to jump in with the policy arguments that I observed and listened to going back between the court and Mr. McDermott. Clearly, the policy has been articulated by Delaware courts is that the statute of repose is to be strictly construed. And the reason for this, I would submit, is very logical. Delay is deadly in the land use process. There has to be certainty once you get to the record plan level and there is advertisement of that approval that you can move forward with your project with certainty that banks can lend money and that folks can rely on that very short period. And I think that is the policy that the courts in Delaware have pulled out of the language of the legislature. The alternative policy that has been suggested by plaintiffs is a policy that has arisen out of cases, a different line of cases, that result after you get over the hurdle of statute of repose.
Well, before we get to the policy, let's go back to what we have to confront first, and that's the literal language of 8126. Mr. McDermott just argued to us that if you read that statute literally, as we must, it talks about enactment of or adoption in different places of an ordinance or some other form of change to the map or amendment to the zoning code. Is this contract zoning the equivalent of enacting an ordinance or adopting an ordinance?
It is not, Your Honor, because as a first step of the analysis, I would submit this was not contract rezoning, and I'm happy to explain why. But I think before you get to that question,
well, where did the Court of Chancery come down on that issue?
The Court of Chancery did not reach the issue because if you cannot meet the statute of repose, you don't get to the merits of whether it was or was not an improper action.
Well, what we're looking for you to do is tell us what the agreement accomplished that fits within the statute. Read the statute, pick a word, and say, we did this.
Certainly, Justin Holland. We believe we've actually satisfied Section A and B. We only have to satisfy one, as the court is aware. Under Section A, our argument before the court below was that this, in fact, was a regulation. It was a regulation, and we noted in our briefing how the Delaware courts have defined regulation, and it includes direction of government. Excuse me, let me cite directly, if I can, from the definition that we cited. Regulation under the Bay Colony case means a rule or order prescribed for management or government. and resolutions, a resolution was adopted here. We would submit the MAR did that under A. It was a regulation. What Vice Chancellor Noble did, he didn't have to reach that question because he accepted plaintiff's argument in their complaint, and he noted all the spots in their complaint where they allege that this was a rezoning or an alteration of the zoning code or the comp plan, and he accepted their argument. Gave them the benefit of the argument that, assuming you are correct in your complaint that this was a rezoning, Section A applies. We, however, argued that this was a regulation, that the resolution was a regulation, not unlike resolutions adopted every day in Newcastle County or every week in Newcastle County.
Regarding changed the height limit for the building, didn't it?
It did change the height limit, but it changed the height limit consistent with the comp plan, which was an ordinance that had been previously adopted that called for relaxed bulk standards in this specific district. So under A, Justice, we would argue that the resolution was a regulation and it falls within the A criteria.
Well, Mr. The zoning ordinance said how many feet?
The zoning ordinance that we believe we're under, the zoning ordinance we applied under, not the new zoning ordinance that plaintiffs refer to, but the zoning ordinance we're under are actually, there's two in our argument. One is the zoning code itself and the comp plan that was adopted after the zoning code that carries the force of law that permitted the town to relax bulk standards.
Mr. Tucker,
yes,
I'm having a problem discerning how your position confronts head on the position of the other side. I understand that you're taking the position that what was adopted here was a regulation, but the key term that the other side relies on is enactment. And their argument is it doesn't matter whether it's whether it was a regulation or not, it wasn't enacted.
Well, Your Honor, if you look at the resolution that was adopted, it specifically states that what was approved via the resolution was the plan, the record plat plan in Exhibit 2, C-64. And that is typically, at least in Newcastle County, it's a resolution that is the vehicle that is adopted, that is voted upon, is enacted, which then...
Well, that's putting the rabbit in the hat. The other side says a resolution is not an enactment, at least in this case it wasn't.
Right, and we respectfully disagree. There was a 4 to 5 hour public hearing. There was public input on this proposal, and after 111 people spoke, about half for, about half against, it's pretty good in Delaware zoning to get about half in favor, there was a vote, and the vote was to enact the resolution.
Well, you say that, but is the word enact, does it appear anywhere in the record of what the council did?
Justice, if I could have a moment, I can pull the resolution directly.
Well, there seems to be the suggestion that enact is a term of art, and in order to enact, you have to follow certain due process procedures, whether you at the end of the day refer to what you voted on as a resolution, a regulation, an adoption of an amendment, an ordinance, no matter how you characterize it. Is there some magic in the word enact? Is it a term of art that requires certain steps be taken? And did that happen here?
Your Honor, I would submit that yes, the process that took place in this case exceeded what was required under the code that we made application of. It exceeded it, and it met and exceeded it, and it did it in this way. It met the code because there are specific requirements in the code we applied under, which was the former code, regarding how you submit a plan and how it gets processed by the building official, which it was, and that's articulated in our brief. In addition, because the comp plan required a ratification process for this specific property, because it was such a high-profile property, we sought council's approval for the ratification, as articulated in the comp plan, which is also an ordinance. Had we not done that, I respectfully submit, opposing council would be here today saying they should have sought that ratification. We did
but
that.
You just said the comp plan is also an ordinance.
It is. It is. And so that has the force of law under Title Title 22. So we had to comply with that. We were mandated to comply with that. So we followed both the procedures by submitting the plan to the building official, pursuant to the code steps in the former code, and we quote them in our briefing below and with this court. We also followed the language out of the comp plan, which required us to go through the public hearing process in front of town council. We did both of those things, and in addition, we had three public workshops that occurred not back-to-back, but over the series of a couple of months, because the town wanted participation. They wanted public input. They wanted to give a full and fair opportunity beyond what the code required for folks to know about this and participate in it. And I can assure you, they did know about it, and they did participate in it, and the record demonstrates that. That's why you had 111 people there. That's why this hearing lasted 4 to 5 hours. It was a true zoning hearing regarding a plan that was under consideration that happens regularly in zoning matters throughout the state. And at the end of the day, after careful consideration, there was a vote, and the vote was...
I think the other side agrees that the end result was a rezoning. The issue, the argument that they make is that that rezoning could be challenged after 60 days if it, or cannot be, only if it takes a certain form. And the form has to be the adoption, whether by resolution or otherwise, of an explicit amendment to the zoning code. All that happened here was the approval of a contract that had the incidental effect of amending the zoning code. That's the argument. Can you respond to that argument in those terms so that we can understand where the divide is?
Yes, Justice. One, our argument or response to that would be at C-132, which is the resolution itself, which was adopted on February 26. The town wrote, "Now therefore be it resolved by the commissioners of the town of Dewey Beach, Sussex County, in session, met as follows. Section 1, the amended mutual agreement and release dated February 19th is hereby approved. Section 2, the plan titled Record Plat Plan of Mixed-Use Complex by McBride and Ziegler, et cetera, and revised building permit application, et cetera, are incorporated herein by this reference and are hereby approved subject to any conditions listed on the plan." I would submit that that language is sufficient to fall within 10 Del Code 8126A regarding a change or new regulation. In addition, it also, I would submit, falls under B, which specifically talks about a plan being approved. There's no doubt that that language and the advertisement that was supplied in the newspaper subsequently specifically talks about this plan being approved, which included the height, which included the uses, which included the square footage, and included who approved it, not just the town council, but also the building official. So we believe, respectfully, that we've satisfied A as a regulation that was approved and enacted pursuant to the resolution, but also under B. Have just a few moments, and I would like to, if I may, just briefly talk about the adequate remedy at law issue. As Vice Chancellor Noble noted, mandamus was available. Whether that was adequate or sufficient was not challenged in the court below. We submitted in our briefing that it was adequate and sufficient. We also identified two other adequate remedies, which would have been a potential direct appeal to the Superior Court, as well as a writ of cert. So we believe
that relates to the failure of the building inspector or the town, whatever the title is, to assist the people who were protesting to process an appeal to the Board of Adjustment?
It does, Chief Justice. And in a nutshell, none of the plaintiffs signed the appeal. Their names are listed in an appeal that was actually filed by Ms. Claybrook, who's not a plaintiff. But in that appeal, she challenged council's actions in front of the Board of Adjustment. Under the code, state and town code, you cannot appeal a decision of county council to the Board of Adjustment, only a decision of the building official. appeals of counsel have to come to a court.
So there would have been no real basis for expecting a petition for a writ of mandamus to have been granted?
I believe under the writ, if you believe that the counsel is wrong, you can challenge that directly in Superior Court. But you cannot challenge that in front of the Board of Adjustment because their jurisdiction does not include decisions by legislative bodies.
Okay. And thank you very much.
Thank you, Chief Justice. Thank you, Justices.
Good morning, Chief Justice, Justices of the Supreme Court. My name is Megan Manzavinos. I represent the town of Dewey Beach. If it pleases the court, I'd like to focus my remarks on the adequate remedy at law, which I think was the secondary basis on which the Court of Chancery found that it had no subject matter jurisdiction. And I'd like to kind of clear up, based on Mr. Tucker's remarks in the briefing, what the Chancery Court found here was that the adequate remedy at law was not mandamus. It was an appeal to the Dewey Beach Board of Adjustment pursuant to 22 Delaware Code Section 321 and some companion provisions in the Dewey Beach Zoning Code. The court also found that if plaintiffs in fact had pursued such an appeal and if that appeal was never heard, this is where the mandamus comes into play, that there was still an adequate remedy at law, and that was to use the petition to Superior Court for a writ of mandamus to compel the Board of Adjustment to hold a hearing and to compel the building inspector to transmit the appeal and the papers constituting the record to the Board of Adjustment. Contrary to what was argued in the plaintiff's briefing, the remedy is not, in the first instance, the right to petition the Superior Court for mandamus. Nor does it really have anything to do with the actions of the town manager. The right at issue here comes from 22 Delaware Code Section 324, and the companion provision in the Dewey Beach Code is Section 71-3, which is part of the building code. And those provide that any person aggrieved by the decision of an administrative official relating to zoning or any person aggrieved by the decision to issue or not issue a building permit can appeal those decisions to the Dewey Beach Board of Adjustment. And you see, in the legislature has established that process as the proper means of challenging a zoning decision or a decision to issue or not issue a building permit. So in this case, there were two opportunities for these plaintiffs to pursue an appeal to the Board of Adjustment. The first is the February 26th decision, not of the council, but of the building inspector to sign off on the plat plan. The second is when the building inspector actually issued a building permit under his signature on July 15th. The building inspector under the code is required before he does either of those things to certify that the plan is code compliant. So those are the actions that are what the right of appeal springs from. That's the remedy at law. And the plaintiffs really, any way you look at it, they didn't pursue it. We know from the record that there was an attempt to appeal something that happened on February 26th to the Board of Adjustment. And we also know that only two of the plaintiffs had any kind of involvement whatsoever in that attempt. There were only one person who is not a party to this appeal signed those papers. Two of these plaintiffs had their names listed on the memorandum. So we know that the other two, Mr. McKinney and Mr. Kaminsky, took no steps whatsoever to secure an appeal to the Board of Adjustment.
But during this time period, the town was saying, no, there's no appeal to the Board of Adjustment, right?
The town manager said the appeal was improper, and facially it is. Because if you look at it, it's not an appeal from the decision of an administrative official. It is an appeal from the decision of town council. And I think that's where...
Oh, is that your position today?
Yes, it is. And I think, you know, the Chancery Court found that, and the plaintiffs did not take issue with that in their briefing in this court. And in fact, they kind of circled back and said, well, yeah, we know what it says on the form, but we really were appealing the decision of the building inspector.
What would the Board of Adjustment have reviewed had there been a timely and appropriate appeal from the building inspector's either approval of the plan or the granting of a building permit?
I think they would have been able to review the decision of the building inspector.
Well, I understand that, but what would they have reviewed about that decision? Because they would not have reviewed the original zoning agreement, the MAR. That wouldn't have been within the building inspector's province to pass on anyway.
No, but they would have reviewed the plat plan, which contains notes about the shell of the building and how it fits in with the zoning code. And I think by the building inspector signing off on that plat plan and by him signing off on the building permit, he was fulfilling his obligation under the building code, section 71, to certify that those plans were compliant with the zoning code. So the decision is you're either saying, well, either the building inspector didn't do anything and he just signed off on the plat plan without assuring himself that it was compliant with the zoning code, or he made an error in certifying that it was compliant with the zoning code. That's the decision, and those are the materials.
But there would have been no opportunity for those who were complaining, at least in theory, about his action, to challenge the underlying change in the zoning map.
Maybe not, but as the Chancery Court found,
there's no maybe about it, because if a vice chancellor says there is an adequate remedy at law, he's saying you can get the relief you seek by law. You don't have to come into equity, and in fact, I have no jurisdiction if you have an adequate remedy at law. Emphasis on adequate. If you can't challenge the fundamental underpinning, which is whether or not this, and I'll just use the term without putting much meaning behind it, contract zoning. If you can't challenge that, what's the point?
Well, I think the point all along from the plaintiff's perspective, it was to stop this building from being built. And I think that's what the chancellor decided. He, as he was required to do by law, did not take the complaint at its face value.
Well, it's a possibility that I don't understand what's going on here. But the building inspector who passes on the plat plan and the building inspector who decides whether to issue a building permit or not looks to see whether all the conditions have been met under the zoning ordinance or the zone or the comprehensive plan. If he's bound by the decision of the commissioners or the council ultimately about adopting an amendment to the zoning map, he can't change that. He can't say, I think they did it illegally, that it was contract zoning, they should have adopted an ordinance, and they should have published notice of the adoption or enactment of an ordinance. They can't do it the way they did it, by resolution, claiming later that, well, it's a resolution, therefore it's a regulation, as if those two words mean the same thing. So how is it an adequate remedy at law if you can't get to the fundamental error that they complain of today?
Well, the fundamental error there and the appealable act is the building inspector's it would be the claim that the building inspector was compelled. He, under law, his legal obligation does not allow him to be compelled by the town council to do anything. His obligation is to satisfy himself that this plat plan, which was an integral part of the MAR, is compliant with the zoning code. And if the claim is that he failed to do that, that's the appealable act. That's where the Board of Adjustment...
Your position is the Board of Adjustment could have decided that this amendment to the comprehensive plan was illegal and therefore deny the issuance of a building permit?
They certainly could have denied the issuance of a building permit.
But not on that basis.
On the basis that the project did not comply with the zoning code. And that would have stopped this whole thing in its tracks.
But they couldn't say that the enactment of the change in the zoning code, which allowed the application for the building permit to be made, was illegal. They can't make that decision, right? They can't say the MAR was illegal.
No, they cannot.
All right, so how is an adequate remedy at law?
As the Chancery Court concluded, what the plaintiffs were really seeking here was to have this project declared in violation of the zoning code and to stop the building from being built. That's what they're seeking in this lawsuit. I think the contract zoning and all of those types of things, the only harm flowing from that is that this building is being built. They're claiming it's higher than what's permitted under the zoning code, and they're arguing that somehow they've been materially harmed by that. So I think the Chancery Court took a look, as he's required to do by law, at what these plaintiffs were seeking, what were they trying to accomplish. And I don't think the beef is so much with this alleged contract zoning, it's with this building that they're claiming does not comply with the zoning code.
If there had been a challenge to the adoption of, or enactment, or whatever the right word is, of the MAR within 60 days, how would it have been challenged? What would have been the mechanism or the process for challenging it under our statutory framework?
Well, in that case, this, again, is the secondary argument and the secondary grounds. If the challenge had been mounted within 60 days, I would submit to you they would have filed suit in Chancery Court. Now, the other thing is they put the process in motion after less than 30 days to secure the Board of Appeals hearing. And what I really think, I think that's, you know, that kind of evidences the fact that what they were really seeking to do was stop this building from being built. That, you know, this claim of contract zoning, you know, if they were able to get it in front of the Board of Adjustment and they were able to stop the building permit from being issued, it wouldn't have mattered whether how it was accomplished or what the town council did. I think.
Did I hear you correctly? If they had properly filed within 60 days, they would have needed to have done that in Chancery. Is that your position?
Yes.
So there is not an adequate remedy involved.
Well, no. I think if their real issue was the illegality of this contract or the contract zoning, I think if that was truly their issue, then no, there's no adequate remedy at law, and then they belonged in Chancery. What I'm telling the court, or what I'm suggesting to the court, is what they were really seeking to accomplish has an adequate remedy at law. They were seeking to stop the building from being built, and that's in front of the Board of Adjustment.
You acknowledge that if what they are complaining about is the MAR and the validity or legality of that document and what it accomplishes, that they would then go to the Court of Chancery because they would not have an adequate remedy at law, correct?
Correct.
But then you say that really wasn't what was bothering them. What was bothering them was the fact that this structure was going to be built. So all they really cared about was blocking the building permit. Have I got you right?
Yes.
Okay. Well, granted that if they could have blocked the building permit, they would have accomplished their goal. But wouldn't they have also accomplished their goal if they got the broader question resolved in their favor with respect to the validity of the MAR?
Not necessarily, because if the determination was that the MAR provided for a building that was compliant with the zoning code, or if it was otherwise legal or consistent with the zoning code, there would be no remedy.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Justices, I know my time is limited. I wanted to address very briefly. I think, Chief Justice, your questioning about the legal remedy reveals the very ruse of the MAR. At A606, the plaintiffs challenged both the building permit approval by the town council through the MAR, but also the building permit approval of the building inspector, which came after the town council's approval. And what happened there was the town said, we don't have jurisdiction. We have the BOA has no appellate jurisdiction over the town council's approval of the building permit. And so they said, so you have none.
All right, just as a matter of interest, is there a statutory basis for appeal from the town council's decision on the MAR?
Not that I'm aware of, Your Honor, not that the court.
So your colleagues would be correct when they said the only alternative then is to go into the Court of Chancery and seek equitable relief.
We believe that's correct, Your Honor.
But there is an appeal from the Board of Adjustment to Superior Court still, isn't there?
if the superior, if, I'm sorry, if the Board of Adjustment makes a decision.
Yeah, I understand
that. Yes,
understand.
Yes, correct. There, it, had the MAR not existed, there would we would be in a much different position. If I may address quickly this ratification requirement and the existence of this regulation as an ordinance and the comp plan having this ratification requirement that they must have satisfied, that would not have existed but for the MAR. It doesn't otherwise exist. And I can direct Your Honors to A662 and A663. This was created, it's a creature of the MAR, this ratification requirement. It's the only way that they could get in to submit this plan under the subdivision and land development regulations. But I also submit it would come as a big surprise to county and town municipal governing bodies that they can make zoning-related approvals through a resolution. What 8126A does, through its strictly construed and plain and unambiguous language, is it reflects a symbiotic approach. Under the statute that the legislature said, if a governing body of a county or municipality takes those steps to enact an ordinance or a zone or a code, or takes the steps to enact an amendment to one of those pre-existing, then the gates will be open for repose to apply. And it's a significant benefit for both the landowner and for the town to have that certainty.
Can I ask you a fact question here? The published notice was March 1, 2011, right?
That's correct.
And the litigation was started August 15th of 2011.
And
what, if anything, was being done to attempt to challenge the MAR between March 1 and August 15th?
First was the efforts to bring this to the Board of Adjustments, to take an appeal to the Board of Adjustment.
And when was that done within the time frame that was prescribed for something like that?
It was. It was before the end of March, and then there was a second appeal that was not resolved until, I believe, June or so, that when they denied it again. But as set forth in the briefs, the MAR itself, the contractual terms, say that there will be a final public hearing in June. It's the only place in the MAR that details where a final hearing and the final plan approval will occur. And that's at Section 8 of the MAR. It's the sixth step of six steps, the putative procedural framework.
There was already a published notice saying that final approval had been accomplished.
But it was inconsistent with either the contractual terms of the MAR, because the February 26th hearing that they said all these final approvals occurred at doesn't reference final at all. And none of the notices of that February 26th hearing that it was going to occur had any reference to final. Only the last paragraph, the sixth step, that said final hearing will occur in June. And we published within 60 days. I'm sorry.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you,
we'll take the case under advisement and recess.